We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It is an insider look at the NBA and the coaches surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on hot topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Tura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Wake that ass up
early in the morning.
The Breakfast Club.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ NV, Charlamagne Tha God. We are the Breakfast Club. We got a special guest in the building.
Legend.
Legend. Comedian. Earthquake. Welcome, brother.
Thank you. Thank you, brothers. It's always an honor to be on this show, man. I look forward to it. It's always a highlight when I come mix with you brothers, man.
Happy to have you here. How you feeling, first of all?
Man, I'm blessed, man. Life is good. Things are good. Career's popping. So I'm good, man. I'm real good.
Mm-hmm. You know, your name came up when Cat Williams did his interview with Shannon Sharp.
Yeah.
Well, I want to talk about just that conversation, period. What has that conversation done for black comedy?
Comedy, I don't think anything, because there wasn't no jokes in it. Mm-hmm. You understand? Mm-hmm. I'm in the joke-telling business. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it didn't do anything, I think, for comedy. Personally speaking, me and him was cool, so you know I didn't know where that came from. Certain thing he said about me, half was true, half was, you know, was a lie, you know. But to each his own. I don't, you know, man. I don't even get into that part of it because see, I'm a type of person. If I have a problem with you, Charlamagne, I'm gonna call you, and man to man, and we either gonna talk it out. We're going to duke it out, but we're going to handle it man to man. I don't talk behind people's back. And that's what social media is. If you go into a platform and talk about a person without you addressing them yourself, when you have opportunities to get in contact and let it be known. So, you know, I don't get into that. You know what I mean? I let them believe what they need to believe.
The reason I asked about what it did for black comedy, because I started seeing people having conversations about black comedy and black comedians that I don't think they were having before.
Such as?
I mean, like yourself or the Samores. Like it was just the whole Def Comedy Jam era. It's like a whole great era of comedy, BET, Comic View, all of that stuff we grew up on.
Right.
I kind of feel like people had kind of not been discussing. But for whatever reason, that interview made everybody start pulling up old clips and having the conversations again.
But it didn't move the needle to help us progress as black comedians in the profession.
Gotcha, you get what I'm saying?
So, you know what I mean? It might do a little better for the people that he talked for, ticket sales such as himself, but that levels back out. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But, you know, it didn't help us as the genre, as the totality of us getting farther, getting through this door of us being appreciated for what we do. Unless you go into mainstream comedy clubs, us as black comedians, if we just, such as myself, precate and just talk to my constituents, takes a long time to get through that. Mm-hmm. And it didn't help anything with that.
Now, he definitely said you was funny, though. He said you was funny. He said nobody gets there quick, not funny. He definitely said that.
Yes. Yeah. And I appreciate that because it's the truth.
Now I was going to ask, you know, you said you were cool or you thought y'all were cool.
Mm-hmm.
Now, people are saying he did that to sell tickets. Some people said he was just venting, or some people it was just a lie just to create the controversy surrounding. And you know him. It's just weird. It just feel like it just came out of nowhere.
Well, I don't know what his motivation on it. Mm-hmm. I have been in this business for 30 years. We as comedians have never did that type of thing ever before. We're not rappers. We don't have beefs. Mm-hmm. You have a disagreement with a comic, we take it with the individual and handle it as such. Outside of just, you know, doing that thing was the first time ever seeing it done. But we're on a new age now. Right. You know what I mean? It's a different age. And I don't know what the motivation of the brother is. When I first ran into Cat, he was the most phenomenal doing things that had never been done in here. He was selling out Madison Square Garden type arenas on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Mm-hmm. And that was never. I was coming into Oakland and they was like, you know, Cat gonna be here. I said, what? I just got here. What are you gonna be? Where he at this Friday? Like, nah, he Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at the with the Warriors play. I was like, oh my God. And then, you know, his acting skills was on top because he was on Hill Street Blues doing the thing. So I have always admired, you know, his work and what it is. But see, I don't get into all that because I'm in the joke telling business, and as long as we talking about jokes, that's the only thing that I am into. I ain't in the pimp game, I ain't in the drug game, I ain't in none of that. I'm into the jokes. So if you have anything to say to me or anything to say to me, it should be right there in that category because that's the only thing that I am involved in the public platform of it. So the rest of that shit he can keep.
Why do you say you can't read? Where did that come from?
I don't know. I mean, y'all interested right there. First of all, it's a lie because I couldn't. I used to be a WBLS.
You did radio for years.
I did radio. And everybody in radio wants to be like y'all and be syndicated. Mm-hmm. But if you're not syndicated and you just got one goddamn station, only way you get some money off live reads in traffic and the rest of them. So it came to that. And another thing, 9th grade, I was picked to go to Georgetown in the Upper Brown program.
Upper Brown program.
That's only reason I didn't make Upper Brown program is when they took me on the tour, they let me taste a fresh donut for the first time. And I ate it. I'm like, oh my God, freshly squeezed orange juice. And I said, you can have all these? They said, yeah. I said, y'all keep on walking around. I'm going to stay right here near these donuts. Because I'm used to eating Hostess donuts. That little pack, but I never had like a Dunkin' one. I'm like, oh my God, this is delicious. So yeah, I was Upper Bound program to be picked out of Georgetown to go to Georgetown in the 9th grade. So I don't know. Also in the military as a air traffic controller, could have been aircraft controller, but I wanted to get out of my mother's house. So I said, what job can I leave today to leave her house? They said, you can be air traffic controller. You can come back in 6 months and leave. I said, nah, I need to leave today. What you got? They said, loading nuclear weapons. I said, I'll take it.
You used to load nuclear weapons?
Yeah, man, I dropped one. I'm trying to see 2 live crew. Man,
stop playing.
No, real talk. Barksdale Air Force Base.
What?
Yeah, trying to see 2 live crew. When Luke first came out, we dropped drop that because you have to change the ordinance to disguise from the Russians.
What are you talking about? You dropped the bomb so you can get out to the club?
No, I told him I wanted to go see Luke Friday. They put me on the schedule. I had already said I'm not going. So they said, go out there, change the ordinance, and then you can leave. Of course, I've been doing this for 10 years. I'm like, all right, we don't need this. So I put it up, and we tell it move the rack and everything. We ain't put all the grease fitting in it. Came down and hit. Boom! Everybody ran. I said, what y'all running for?
A nuclear
a nuke. I said, you hit the ground.
Earthquake, I don't believe it.
I swear to God, I'll kiss somebody here. Listen to me, man. This is God, honest truth. God, take my talent from everything on. My name is in the Pentagon under Broken Arrow. You understand what I'm saying? Yes.
Why they call you Broken Arrow?
That's what happened when you drop a nuke on in the country. It's called a Broken Arrow. When it's a nuke on your own friendly soil and everything is an accident, it's called a Broken Arrow.
So you're radioactive right now.
No, man. It's just, you know, I told them. You understand? I'm in Boxdale, Louisiana, Shreveport, Louisiana.
Yeah.
This when Luke was at the height of his thing and had 150 bad chicks.
Absolutely.
I said, I'm going. And they sent me out here to change the ordinance on the plane. Mm-hmm. So they brought it on themselves.
But the nuke clearly didn't go off.
No, nuclear weapons are some of the most safest ordnance that you got. Conventional is the more difficult because they got to drop at a certain height and then hit the safe thing, safe on it. It's the most safe. But everybody ran. And then base commander came. No, we was on the flight line. We was on the flight line on the B-52, and you put it in the bomb bay to change it out, and it came down and hit the ground. Boom, everybody ran. I was like, what y'all running for? And then they came and got me. Base commander came, and then they took us to the hospital to do drug tests and everything to see if we high. Ain't find nothing but incompetence in my blood, and then they put me on the snack bar.
Damn.
They don't let me touch no more.
No more nukes.
No more planes or nothing. And people are like, you stuck. I said, man, I don't care. E-5 get the same amount of money as loading bombs as an E-5 to pass out coffee. So the check ain't changed. Ain't hurt my feelings.
So how was the concert?
I didn't go.
You didn't get to go?
No, because I had to go to the hospital and get debrief and everything. And
for 2 days?
For 3 days.
What?
They held it for 3 days. They took you got a checklist. See, I was smart enough. I'd start checking all the things on the checklist. So I said, I did all my stuff. So it had to be something wrong with the rack and everything else. Yeah. So that's the only way I was covering myself without getting court-martialed or Article 15 for getting put out. But I sat underneath the Tyrone, and all I thought is, I ain't going to get to see none of these hoes.
Damn.
And I've been waiting. And that's how it came. And it hit, boom, and it ran off.
I don't know, man. A lot of people are going to say, man, Cap might have been right, man. You might have had to read something.
And that's why I dropped him. No, that was a motherfucker, boy. That's when Luke was hot, man. He was on field down New York. One of them things showing them just shaking and everything. And I was like, man, they finally going to do a concert. They're 150. And Shreveport was a small town. Bossier City was a small town in that way. And we had no black women that looked that good in my facility, in my eyesight. So I was looking forward to it, and I told them I wasn't going. So they put us out there. Shout out to Sergeant Anderson, who called me about 2 weeks ago. He was also on the team when we dropped the nuke.
Well, listen, you know you got to prove things to the internet, so go ahead and read that real quick.
Read that. It's a live read. And read it out loud.
Cat Wim is a liar.
That man can read. They ain't play too much of it.
I know what I'm fucking with y'all.
It's a live read. They play too much of it. I want to ask you about, you know, one thing that's been coming up recently is comedians stealing jokes.
True.
Now, it seems like that would seem kind of something that's normal because, you know, if you're talking about a car or you're talking about black versus white, it seems like a lot of it. So has that happened to you?
I've been robbed more than any comedian on earth. I have. I have friends that have taken my jokes. I have friends that have called me and told me they have taken my jokes. I write another one. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. This is what it's the thing I want to do. It happens. That's why I do not look at other comedians perform. Because I don't physically write, I mentally write. So I don't want to be contaminated with the thought. You could sit here and see another comedian tell a joke and subconsciously it be into you. Then you can sit here and get on stage and riff and come up with it and think you came up with it, but you previously saw somebody else do it. Mm-hmm. That's what happens. Sometimes we all, it's only certain many subjects that is just covered. This is your version of OJ trial. Mm-hmm. This is your version of Trump. This is your version of Joe Biden. You know what I mean? So the shit happens. Me, myself, I just continue, you know, I just replenish as they diminish, and I just keep on going with it. And the way I keep myself from even for that ever happening to me, I don't watch other comedians.
I've heard people say that. I found that video with Bernie Mac very interesting, because Bernie Mac was like, people are going to take your jokes. Like,
yes.
Don't say your jokes around other comedians, especially the younger ones when the veterans are around.
Well, veteran and the rest of them. But see, it's the beautiful with me is, and I'm blessed that I don't have to go to a club to work a joke out. Mm. You see what I'm saying? I can mentally see this is going to work, and I can apply it to my regular show as I'm doing it. Take one out, put a new one in, continue to make the rotation go. Certain comedians don't have that process. They have to actually write it down and then try it on a stage, and then you have comedians in the back. Oh, I like that. And then they'll give you the thought pattern. They will give you their version of that thought pattern. Mm. This is what I would have said if I thought of that. You know, that's stealing too. So, you know, they sit there, but you just, it's an occupational hazard.
So you don't got to work yourself out in a comedy club. So have you ever tried a joke and it didn't work? Because it seems like comedians do that. Like, they'll go to a comedian spot at 2 a.m, go for 10 minutes to see if a joke works, and then keep it moving. So you don't do that.
No, I work it out, and I work it out in my set. But see, I don't do elongated jokes, so I'm quicker with it. So I have to come up with more material than an
Azure. That's the radio in you.
Yeah, I have to be quick, because it got to be that in there. You don't have that long joke. You got to get it. Mm-hmm. So if that don't work, I'm already to the next one.
And what made you give up radio?
The reason I gave up radio wasn't no way of being like y'all. I wanted to be syndicated. Mm-hmm. And when I first got into the business, to come to New York, Steve Harvey in the morning,
right,
Quake in the evening. You know what I mean? I wanted to be syndicated the whole way, because that's what I wanted. And then they got bought out. And once they got bought out, mm-hmm. you know, I went to the president and was like, hey, man, what's up with me? With my show. And
right.
They had no aspirations for me being syndicated. So I didn't come to New York just to be mm-hmm. on the radio in one station. So that was the end of that. I said, well, I'm going back to Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And that's what it boiled down to. Syndication is what I wanted. Mm-hmm. And once that was no longer obtainable of being there, it was time to move on. And then, you know, the business is, if you can get one person that can work the board and be the air personality at the same time, you can go ahead and kick the air personality to the side, because I wasn't working the board or nothing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So that's how that worked out.
Was radio a good creative outlet for you?
Very much so.
Okay.
I love radio.
Okay.
I mean, I have my own radio show now. We're number one on Sirius XM. It's Quake's House on Kevin Hart's Laugh Out Loud Radio. So mm-hmm. we're in our sixth season there. So I'm still in the radio, mm-hmm. and we don't do nothing but tell jokes.
Yeah, that was the name of the show on BLS, Quake's House.
Yeah, Quake's House. So what we did was, it's like The View with comics. We just sit around and do topics and let the comics riff.
Has comedy always been this competitive, at least behind the scenes?
No.
Wow.
I mean, it has. You have aspiration. People hate on it. But comedy speaks for itself. See, you can step on that stage and have all the accolades you want. That gets you the first 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. But after that, you got to be funny. So I don't care if you got a TV show or not. If this dude don't have no TV show and he's fun, he's going to blow you off the stage. So the competitiveness of it is being funny. And, you know, it speaks for itself.
What's the science of comedy, man? And the reason I ask you particularly, because people always say you are most comedians' favorite comedian. So to me, it's not just about being funny. Like, because there's people that's funny
right.
in a classroom or funny right. on the radio, but to hit that stage, it don't translate.
And that's the key word I was going to say. It has to translate. You have to make people do something they can't make themselves do, and just laugh and relate to them from no matter what the background. And it must be sophisticated enough that it's not a knock-knock joke, but not too complicated that you alienate the audience. Mm-hmm. So that's the sweet spot of it. You know what I mean? And me personally, I'm allergic to the quiet. So I have to keep going rapid fire, mm-hmm. you know, and I would hate to be like some comedians that write a long joke and then have a punchline at the end. Because my fear of it is, suppose they don't get it.
Then you're losing
the audience. You know what I mean? But if you rapid fire quick with quick ones, sharp ones, and going, it's the way of success. And that's the key of it, being relatable.
You think the DMV area gets the credit it deserves for being a comedy hotspot?
No. But we have some of the great, Martin, Dave, me, Tommy Davidson, Tony Woods, it's Don a lot Rollins. Of them. Donnell, my
brother. Man, I was hoping
brother.
You left him out.
Nah,
man.
You can't leave.
I was hoping y'all left Donnell out.
No, you can't leave Donnell out. Yeah, Donnell, you know, these are my, we're in there. We're in. D.C. is a hard market. It's compared to like New York. They don't give you nothing in D.C. Mm-hmm. If you ain't funny, they're going to let you know right there. And they're waiting until you succeed before they give you your accolades, too.
Was your come up was mostly East Coast, though, right?
No, my come up was down in Atlanta. See, once I got out the military, because I left that because the war broke out, I said, I don't mind practicing for war, but y'all fighting for real. I joined the military to get out of my mother's house. I could have stayed in D.C. to get shot at. Fuck this. You understand? These motherfuckers fighting for real. Oh, then you want man. Me to fight over some oil, and I don't even have a car. You better put somebody else out on him. Send Exxon over in the Middle East. Or
how do you just get out?
Hey, man, my time was up, man, and I couldn't get out when I wanted to because they have this stuff called stop loss because in your contract, which is about 200 pages, somewhere deep in there, if you're an essential employee, essential job in the military, you mm-hmm. have to stay in wartime situation. And of course, if you're a bomb loader, you that. So, they wanted to send me overseas. I said, man, I ain't going over there. So I did everything not to go overseas. So as soon as they uplifted and took off the stop loss, let me out, I turned on CNN. Couldn't go back to D.C. because it wasn't no federal, you know, I didn't want to go into illegal pharmaceuticals. So I said, where am I going to go? I turned on CNN, and, you know, they had one of those days, the blessed places, you know, the surveys for black men to prosper well, and the number one city was Atlanta. I said, well, goddamn, here I come. And I grabbed four of my dudes who was also in the military and said, let's go to Atlanta. And I tried to get on stage there to try it out. See, this is no epiphany for me. My career is making the best decision that day. Try to tell a joke, and no better decision has came. So I never had the other things my other peers have. They've seen. They got these great stories. No, this I tried this, and then nothing better came along. And I tried to get on stage in Atlanta, and they had the Comedy Act Theater there. But the owner would never let me get on.
Why?
I don't know. Mm. Then he promised me one time that I was going to be on, you know. And I told all the women, I'm going to actually be on the stage, you know, because you tell any black women in Atlanta back in there, you're a comedian. Have you been at the Comedy Act? Like, no, I'm doing a little white club down in Florida. And all that. All right, tell me when you get on Comedy Act Theater. So he told me I was going to be on there opening up for Paul Mooney. Told the chicks to come see me. When I got there, he told me, nah, I don't have nobody. I didn't tell you that. So, you know, I called my mother and I was like, yo, this motherfucker said I could be on and he can't. And she's like, I told you, you can't get mad at nobody that don't let you ride your bike. You either get your own bike mm-hmm. or don't ride at all. I said, Mama, how am I gonna get my own club? I ain't got no money. I just moved to Atlanta. I said, well, then don't call me and complain about it. That's the love that my mother has. Mm-hmm. She don't pick you up when you fall. She like, get up,
get your
stop
ass
crying,
up.
Get your ass up, stop all that crying. She raised men. So that's what I did. I opened up my own comedy club.
Oh, wow.
And I got some investors, and we opened up Uptown Comedy Corner. And
hold on now,
up.
You found like you skipped a big step just now, Earthquake. How you go from having no money?
Well, what I did was I hooked up with it was this dude named Gary Abdu. He was opening. He had little one-nighters. And I said, what you need to do, we need to do a black comedy club. So I took him to the Comedy Act and showed all the bad business that they was doing. They had 400 seats with two waitresses, no food, no nothing. And they brought the same comedians every week. So it was Ted Koppner and Joe Torre, and they'll be there for the whole month. I say, if we bring in, we go to a better place, bring some food in, bring in with the class, we can do it. So he went to go look for investors, and I went to go get investors. I went to Dion, all the athletes. Yeah, we be in Mexico. Yeah, boy, that's a good idea. Call his people up. They shoot me down. But Gary went and found the number one plastic surgeon in Atlanta, and he gave us $10,000. Say, if you could flip this $10,000, make some money, y'all can come back. So we went down to Birmingham, and that's how we discovered Ricky Smiley. And I seen Ricky. I'm like, hey, man, we're going to do this. So it was me, Ricky, and him. And we flipped the money in Birmingham and brought it back, and then he gave us $500,000. To do the club.
So you discovered Ricky, like just in the comedy club? Or?
Well, we discovered Ricky wanted to be a comedian, but at that time he was in church playing the organ. Mm-hmm. And so I said, man, we're going to open up a club, and we sat around and sit there, and me, him, Gary, opened up. We got the club opening up, and then we opened up three more.
Wow.
Yeah.
So he gave you $10,000. That was the test to see if you were going to come back with it. Y'all came right back with it, gave $500,000.
Gave us $500,000, and we found a place, and we called it Uptown, you know. And that's why we called it Uptown, because they was downtown. They was down there and the bad part of town. And so we called it Uptown. And
what up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. Now, this is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200 percenters. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. If you ever felt like you were always too much this while also never being enough that, this is the podcast for you. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more via my own personal stories, along with interviews with inspiring thought leaders from our community. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community that you need to know. So much of what makes our community so beautiful is our diversity, yet too often those of us who don't fit into this dumb stereotypical box of whatever it means to be Latino are left without a voice or just forgotten about. On this show, I celebrate the uniqueness of our culture and invite you to walk in your authenticity. Listen to Life as a Gringo as a part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courteney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. I'm Abby, a mother of two, and I had these battles myself. Endless excuses, delay tactics, and many tears and tantrums. But I've created a solution. The perfect kids podcast that makes bedtime a dream. It's called Koala Moon, and it's hosted by me, Abby. With over 300 episodes, packed with original stories and sleep meditations, Koala Moon makes bedtimes easy and enjoyable. Episodes start out engaging and really rather magical, but as they progress, they gently slow to a calm and relaxing pace to have your little ones out like a light. Since launching in 2022, Koala Moon has helped with over 20 million nights sleep and received over 6,000 five-star reviews. Win back your evenings. Listen to Koala Moon now on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The rest of it was history. And none, and what they did was they told all the Black comedians, if you work in his club, you can't work in mine. So that's how I became great, because I had to do all the time myself, because none of the Black comics would do it. And that's, it was a blessing and a curse at the same time.
Was Comic View your big break?
In my totality of my career? Or just at that point. At that time, Comic View. Comic View was my big break. That's where everybody, and I could tell Quake fans when they come say, I want to put your A in your mama name. You know, when I know that, then I mean they was original Quake fans.
How do you feel about them bringing back Comic View? You think that
it was great? I was there when they was filming it with Mike and Kev. Any platform that allowed the genre to expand and give opportunities, I'm all for. And I participated, and I've done that my whole career with my radio show and me doing the club and everything else to expand it, because it's a great art form. It's, you know, I don't, this vitriol that's going on, that is not what the job description of. We bring joy and sit here and make people laugh.
What do you think happened to comedy at one time? Because at one time you would see the Comic View, you see the Def Comedy Jam. It was all over TV. It was fun. It was cultural. And then there was a time where it just went away. What do you think that was? Now I'm seeing it's. I think Netflix is doing a good job of bringing comedians out that people haven't seen or heard, or giving them specials. So what do you think was that moment where comedy kind of died for a little?
I think it's always been a vehicle for the others. Now, not for us. I think, you know, we haven't invested in ourselves. Certain people get in the door and they just don't give back, and they forget how they got there. You know what I mean? And provide opportunities for other people. And, you know, I mean, I'm glad Kev brought Comic View back, and I wish somebody else bring Def Jam back, because these are the times that we're about to go into. We need that voice from a comedian to put laughter to this sorrow that's coming.
I don't think people want to take the risk. Like, you know, when I talk to a lot of comedians that I admire, like, the first thing they say is like, man, I ain't going on TV with my shit. Because like, they still want to talk the way they talk on stage. They don't want to bring that to television and then risk everybody on Twitter. Oh, you cancel him and cancel her.
Taking his sponsorship.
You know, the cancel part, if you're true into your conviction and you're standing on that foundation, it should be cool. You know what I mean? When you just going out to be controversy for the fact of controversy, I think it is. Explain your point. Mm-hmm. Explain where you're coming from. And if it's true, I personally feel, is if it's rooted in within your belief, then something just like your jokes, you're going to find an audience that agree with you. Mm-hmm. And you're going to find an audience that don't. Mm-hmm. That's what I feel the whole time of. And the thought about it is you don't have to go on stage. Executive producer, give it up to the next up and coming and give them a shine.
That's right.
You know what I mean? You don't have to be. Put your name on it. You can walk in there and they say, hey, Quake, you know, we want to do three movies. All right, I want to do three movies, but I also want to do this comedy show. And I got this young comedian that I want to host it off of. How much is going to cost? What's the budget would you give me for that? And I'll make it work on that for the opportunity. Because there's so many different platforms that you can give for that younger comedian to get on to and get on. And I think Kevin did a great job on that, too, because he was putting out special with different people. There's certain people that gives opportunities to other people. And certain people get through the door and lock the motherfucker short and say, ain't nobody else outside.
Well, was it true? I mean, Dave did that for you, too, though.
Yes, he did. Yeah, gave me my biggest break in my career.
Really? The Netflix stand-up special?
Yeah.
Really?
Oh. Changed my life.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was the only one. All the rest of them say he's funny, he's great, now mm-hmm. but he was the only one to bring it in there and say, this man is who it is, and stood on it and didn't. You know, it's easy to put somebody on that you know don't have the possibility to be even with you or surpass you. Mm-hmm. You know, but it's hard when you say this man is equally as talented or might even better, and I'm going to give it to him like somebody else gave a shot to me, and very few of them does that. And Dave gave that to me. Matter of fact, we're going to do another one because of him. Netflix came and gave me an offer for a new one that I'm going to do this year.
Wow. How did that conversation happen with you and Dave? Was it, y'all had a great... You wanted to do a Netflix special, or he reached out to you? How did that conversation happen?
He called me. I really thought he was punking me. I thought it was a punk I thought it was a prank. And they called me up, and they said, Dave Chappelle wants permission to get your number because he wants to call you, my agent called, because he wants to produce your special. Oh, yeah, right. And then he got, hey, man, I got you. We're going to do it. I was like, all right, man. And it was the rest of it. It was Stan Lathan, you know what I'm saying? And the whole team he has, he knows how to shoot it. And it changed my life. And I knew this was a career-defining opportunity. And I addressed it as such. I was that serious with it.
How did it change your life? Like, what?
Changed my life by...
International profile?
International profile, exactly. Mm-hmm. I went on tour with him, Chris Rock, over in Europe, and to hear, you know, nobody look like me screaming my name in a foreign country coming from Southeast D.C. was amazing. Liverpool, we went to so many different countries, London and all the rest of it. And then it got me in to Netflix for them to sponsor my next special and able to do more business because they are the premier one when it comes to doing comedy specials.
Wow. Is it true that Kim Whitley ghosted you after you put it down on her? I'm putting that in air quotes.
I get her on that. Me and Kim used to date for a brief, but she ghosted me out there. She hit me and left me.
You might not have put it down like you thought you did then, Earthquake.
Hey, man, I'm a king. I don't pay for dinner and satisfy you. You got to...
You gotta pick one. Huh?
You gotta pick one. I'm King Joffrey now. You gotta take care of the king, man. Yeah.
So it was a one time thing?
Yeah, we dated one time. Kim did more for me than anything. When I first had my biggest break before that time, my TV show on ABC, and Kim came and helped me navigate through that. Because I had a lot of people around me that wasn't good for me. Mm-hmm. And she came in and showed me how to do TV and reiterated what I know now is, I'm not an actor. I'm a movie star. And there's a difference.
What's the difference?
Ed told me this, and now I understand it. An actor.
Ed who?
Eddie Murphy,
okay.
Yeah, Ed. He said a movie star is a person that already has the content. an actor is a person you have to give the content to. See what I'm saying? We're walking content. So when you tell me something to read, which I do, I would say, that's not how I would say it. I would say it like this, and I know the best way to say this because I'm in the front line saying this to people every day.
That's right.
An actor will sit here and just interpret and say, okay, I'm going to digest what you say and formulate it to your specification so it'll be said the way you writ, you wrote it. And that's where it was a turn. I wouldn't talk like this. So if you have people that's not, they give you a show in your image based upon what you say. Say, we're going to do a show about earthquake, about your life. And then you got people that don't know nothing about your life writing and say, this how you say it. And you don't have the authority to change that writer's, you know, the way it's written. And you'll struggle with that part of it. So you have to say, forget it. And she was the one that on the set while I was filming my pilot for ABC pulled me to the side and said, say how you want to say it. This show, And once she empowered me with that, it took off, but it didn't get picked up.
Man, that's so interesting what you said, because when I think about Eddie Murphy, I think about him in, I don't know if it was Beverly Hills Cop or 48 Hours, but one of them roles wasn't for him. It was for Sylvester Stallone or somebody.
Right.
And just him being him, he went in there and did
made it.
Made it his. Like, when now you think about that, it's like, oh, that is, okay, I get that.
I mean, look at it always. Chris Tucker played Chris Tucker.
Yeah.
When you get Kevin, every comedian who had the biggest movies, they was playing themselves in that fictitious role. You allow him, why hire him? For what you, the reason you picked him, you didn't pick him because he's an actor. You didn't go to none of these schools, Juilliard, Harvard, none of these theaters. You picked him because he's a individual talent. So why would you bring him in and then put him in this square? It just never made sense. And some of the biggest stars has always been comedians, but they always been themselves. Adam Sandler, all of them, they play themselves. So they are movie stars. They're not actors. You put him in a fictitious. How would Ice Cube be in this situation? How would Kevin Hart be in this situation? You know what I mean? That's how it is. And if you don't have the power or you don't have the management or the team to be able to structure your deal with the flexibility, you know, you sit there. And then they change it all the way through because they'll give you a deal and you'll pitch the show to them and they say they love it. And by the time they finish writing it, the show ain't nothing what you pitched it to. And then it fails. You're like, motherfucker, I never wanted a gay dog that flew around the country. You know what I mean? Because they were like, if you could get a gay dog, that'll really set it off. I can see it.
A gay dog?
Yeah.
That flies around. Now, you know, a conversation that always comes up is black comedians wearing a dress.
True.
Why? And what's your thoughts on it?
It's art. When white dudes, Marlon Wayne said it so perfectly, when white dudes do it, man, they're genius. When we do it, it has something to do with our manhood. You know, it's art. If it's a hit and it's funny, White Chicks was great. Big Mama House was great. You know what I mean? I know Marty. Marty is one of the manniest mans there is.
Sinead. Larry Johnson, basketball player.
Grandmama.
My
mother, Flip Wilson. Geraldine.
Yeah.
You understand? Big, I'll kill you. The whole nine. And so it's just another, you know, another way to take shot at people that they want to. And what's heartbreaking for me is younger comedians that's taking these shots and at the people that paved the way for them. And it's sickening.
Well, I think a lot of times too, people use those things to justify why they not where they want to be.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. And I strongly believe that to the core of my heart. Because you need something to tell yourself so you can go to sleep at night.
Right.
Why I'm not there? It has to be.
Because I ain't putting
you
on a dress.
You sold out.
That's right.
You taking it to the fact. And if everybody sold out who had a TV show, that means there is no God.
That's right.
Yep,
that's right.
There is no God. If God has destined me to be a network television star, You telling me that the forces in the gatekeeper are mm-hmm. far stronger than my God. That's what you're telling me. Mm-hmm. So none of us can have a television show, hit TV show, without taking it to the face.
Jesus.
Taking right. it to the face.
All right. You know what's so crazy, though? But when you watch these shows that we like, right? I don't care if it was Cosby Show, Martin, Family Matters, Different World, mm-hmm. Living Single. They were great shows.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
These people are talented.
Yes.
And most of these people still are doing what they're doing now. They still have some type of success.
Exactly. And that's what it is, because it takes a long time to get there. Do you know how hard it is to have a hit TV show?
Yeah,
of course.
You understand what I'm mm-hmm. saying? They just don't get easy way. It's like hitting the lottery.
That's right.
It is like hitting the lottery, the chances that you're going to get a TV show. Mm-hmm. First of all, get the deal that they pick you out of all the other comedians out here. Then you get a great enough team around. And then the first y'all come together to get the chemistry. And it translates. And then you'll have those executives saying, well, it didn't do this, let me catch you. Mm-hmm. Before he got a chance to get on his legs. You know what I mean? To go, man. You got a better chance of hitting the lottery than having a hit TV show.
And the key word is hit.
Yes.
By the way, it's hard to even sell one.
True.
It's hard to get it greenlit.
Thank you.
It's hard, and once it gets on TV, it's no guarantee it's going to be a success.
Every year, for the first 3 years, you're on pins and needles. You don't get comfortable until the fourth or maybe the fifth. At that time, they already see it's time for it to go syndicated. We can go and get these 100 apps, going to make it, and we'll go on way mm-hmm. through. But after that, that first year when you get in, you good with it. Boom, you gone. The second year, mm-hmm. if it don't, second year, they can let you go. The third year, the head of the studio who love your show, he gets fired. They bring in a new dude. I hated your show, DJ. If you get that shit yeah, over here. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And you gone.
Like a couple years ago, it was you, DL. Didn't somebody pick y'all up?
Yeah, we had deals. Mm-hmm. Didn't get through. Then I had a deal from the Netflix. Everything. New special, new TV mm-hmm. show, all that. Then these niggas going strike.
Dang.
And you're like, ah, damn. You know? So now we back at it again, negotiating for my TV show, my special, and the rest of it. That's just where it is. Now you got to formulate a good team, casting out. Mm-hmm. I mean, Martin did it. He had Gina. He had Pam. It was seasonal Cole, yeah. actress that he could lean on to learn it while the time they carry it. And it's beautiful. You just hope that the stars line up for you too.
That's right. I was
you know
gonna
what
ask,
I mean?
You know, every comedian comes, I always ask, do you remember your best show and your worst show?
Best show. My Netflix special was my best show because what it turned out to be.
Mm-hmm.
My worst show was North Carolina, AT&T. Because, see, it's hard for me to tell jokes to people that never had a job.
College.
Yeah, college kids.
AT&T,
yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it's hard to relate to that type of thing, you know. So that was my worst show. You know what I mean?
Do you care about making the transition from stand-up to TV?
And it's A&T, not AT&T. A&T.
A&T, okay. A&T. Well, A&T. A&T. Yes and no.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think commercial success define if you're great or not as a stand-up comedian
mm-hmm.
or made it or not. The yes part, I want that money. Mm-hmm. I want that success of the financial security that comes along with it
mm-hmm.
and the comfortability of being home Monday through Friday, stepping on a stage and doing my product and then coming back home. The road is good, but it's tiresome.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
The money is great, but it's tiresome at mm-hmm. this point. And been doing it over 30-something years. I am coming to this point. How do I make as much money as I can this next 5 years and get the hell out?
Hey, talk to us about the difference between being broken in debt, because you said at one point you were in the hole for $3 million.
Yeah, man. See, being broke, that means you just ain't got no money. In debt means even if you got some money, you got to give it to somebody else. You understand what I'm saying? That's the difference on it. And I was in debt because I was playing the game a lot of entertainers do. When I blow, I would take care of Uncle Sam during that time. Oh, and it never came. You know what I mean? And Uncle Sam don't play. So now, you know, it didn't come to fruition on that point of blowing at that point. So now I just put the money to the side knowing, you know, around April, I'm going to get molested financially.
And when Uncle Sam comes, Uncle Sam comes.
Oh, he comes.
And they average up. They don't average, they average up.
Mm-hmm. And they let you. And see, the thing about Uncle Sam so good about it, he a sleeper cell. He allows you not to pay him until you fall off. Then he comes see you.
Yeah.
And it's not the money that you owe him that gets you. It's the penalties and interest, the interest.
Yes, oh, yeah.
It's usually more than the principal. So the best thing is, so I like, okay, once it took me to get out, it took me about 6 years to get out of that hole.
You owe Uncle Sam $3 million?
Yeah, I owed them $3 million.
Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm. Got all of it under, you know.
Thinking about it now, I feel like it'll stress you out a little bit. Just...
No, I mean, that's why I'm an independent. I don't believe that taxation, you should not have to give 40% of anything to anybody. If I gave 40% out of every dollar to alcohol, I'd be an alcoholic. If I gave 40% of my dollar to drugs, I'd be a drug addict. So why is it cool for the government to get 40?
And by the way, I wouldn't have no problem with it if I saw that money actually going to our communities.
True.
If I saw it going to our communities and, you know, our schools was better and you know, people could afford better housing because whatever it is, if people had free health care, I wouldn't have no problem with it.
I would have a problem with it. Well, and I'm going to tell you why, because there's so many billionaires and millionaires that pay no taxes, right?
True.
And they let them slide, and these are companies that had generational wealth, white companies that had this for 20, 30 years, haven't paid taxes. When you look at Donald Trump, and Donald Trump says he paid, you know, $10 in tax for the year.
True.
And then you look at yourself, but then you see what Donald Trump is worth. You say, ain't no goddamn way.
Ain't no goddamn. And on that part of it, I wouldn't have no problem doing all that, too, if I utilize some of the things. If I ain't got no kids, I shouldn't be paying no goddamn public school money. I ain't got no kid in public school. And if my kid is in private school, fuck, I'm paying for public school. You know what I'm saying? Certain services, if I'm not utilizing them, I shouldn't have to pay for them. You know what I mean? And that's what I think. They should break it down to just as simple. In the United States, the American dream is free. Only thing the government going to take care of your health care and your education. Other than that, you're on your own.
I thought about that, too, in regards to, like, you know, when people talk about reparations. It's like, yo, if you make a certain amount of money, just don't tax me.
Exactly.
Don't tax me. I'm saying if you're a black person that make a certain amount.
Black person. They do that to the white people all the time.
But I'm saying if you're black and you don't have a certain amount of money, yes, you give them reparations. But if you're black and you make a certain amount of money, just don't tax me.
Don't tax me.
I'm good.
I'm with that. Yeah, that's a great-ass idea.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
Do you still consider yourself a Republican?
No. I'm an independent. Okay. Me and Sheryl Underwood used to be the only comedians back in the day that was Republican. But now, since the Republicans has been hijacked by the MAGA, I had to tap the fuck out.
I tell folks that all the time. I said if even though I feel like Republicans have always been the party of white supremacy, but if traditional conservative values came back as opposed to this MAGA stuff, I think right now people are looking for something different so bad that you'd see a lot more black and brown people going to be Republican.
I mean, if you really look at it, black people, we are the most conservative people. We believe in God. We believe in less government, which is the police. Mm-hmm. You understand? And we believe in personal responsibility, even if some of us don't. Mm-hmm. So that used to be the doctrine for the Republican Party back in the day when I was in the military and strong military, which they gave us a raise all the time. Mm-hmm. So that what made me a Republican back in the day.
Yeah, I feel I'm an independent, too. I feel like both parties are full of shit, but clearly what we're seeing on the Republican side right now, that's something we ain't never seen before.
Oh, he gonna win.
That's fascism all day.
Oh, yeah, he gonna win.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, fuck yeah.
I feel like that some days, but then some days I'm like, man, he ain't won nothing since 2016.
No, but he wasn't never on the ballot. He on the ballot this time.
Damn.
And Joe, man, any day. I was watching Joe President Joe Biden do a speech, and I swore an angel just go by his head. I said, they about to pick him up any day now. Yeah, angel just gonna come grab him up.
I got a homeboy who say, man, every day I wake up and pray for Joe Biden good health.
Oh, man. Well, you better keep praying him, because he on the call log.
He on the call log, man.
You see him?
You see the black dude from the Crossroads video with the long coat and the shades? Is that the dope?
Boom, 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 boom. What you gonna do? Ain't nowhere to hide.
When
judgment look for Joe, looking for Joe. I tell you, I saw the angel. He was flying by him. I said, oh, Lord, he on the pickup squad.
Lord have mercy.
Well, Earthquake's going to be at Sony Hall tonight and tomorrow.
That's right. Get your
tickets if you haven't got them already. And we appreciate you for joining us, brother.
Man, thank y'all for having me. Please follow me at The Real Earthquake. And I love you, brother. Keep doing
you
what
too,
you're
King.
Doing, man.
Appreciate
you too,
Earthquake.
My brother.
Thank you,
God bless y'all.
It's Earthquake. It's The Breakfast Club. Good morning.
Wake that ass up early in the morning.
The Breakfast Club.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old Richmond, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.